Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast Pod Shots.
People of Eternia, I stand before the great eye of the galaxy, chosen by destiny to receive the powers of Grayskull. This inevitable moment will transpire before your eyes, even as He-Man himself bears witness to it.
Now, I, Skeletor, am master of the universe.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Podshots. I'm your host, Derek Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 1987 film Masters of the Universe. The film was written by David O'Dell and directed by Gary Goddard, I believe. Isn't it Goddard? It's not Goddard.
Yeah, Gary Goddard.
And it stars Dolph Lundgren and Frank Langella. Here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, and returning after a long absence, I would have to say, is Mr. Cameron Rice.
I have the power!
Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. And this podcast is also brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and choose from over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title for free and start listening. It's just that simple. So go to
sword and sorcery books.
There you go. So go to audibletrial.com/plainlabelpodcast and get started today. So, Cameron. This is early in the day for you, so what are you having to drink today, my good man?
Well, I just finished up some oatmeal, had a big bowl of oatmeal, and having some coffee and OJ along with it.
Hopefully not mixed.
No.
A little cup of coffee, a little OJ, huh?
Well, I'm doing good on this disappointing Prime Day.
Yeah, really. I'm going with... I don't know. I don't drink this that often, but it seems like every time I'm recording, I tend to be drinking this, but I'm having another Red Bull vodka today. So I've got that rolling again. So with that, we are ready to begin the 1987 film Masters of the Universe.
At the far end of the universe, there is a planet ruled by a being of utter evil. And there is only one man who dares challenge him. They are locked in a battle to the death. A battle that will take them across the heavens.
Stop him!
A battle that will finally be fought.
I want them hunted down and brought to me!
Across the face.
Police! Nobody move!
Of Earth.
I think I'm gonna need some backup.
Can you show us the way?
Of
course.
No!
Somebody help me!
From a distant galaxy, they have come to Earth. Dolph Lundgren as He-Man, Frank Langella as Skeletor. Only they have the powers to be Masters of the Universe. Live the adventure.
Okay, and the plot synopsis of this, according to IMDb, is as follows. The planet Eternia is in the aftermath of Skeletor's war on Castle Grayskull, which he has won after seizing Grayskull and the surrounding city using the cosmic key developed by the Thanorian locksmith Gwildor. The sorceress is Skeletor's prisoner, and he begins draining her powers as he waits for Eternia's moon to align with the great eye of the universe that will bestow godlike powers upon him. Once on Earth, He-Man and company team up with two teenagers as they attempt to find the key and return home. However, the Dark Lord Skeletor and his vile minions are soon hot on their trail as they bring He-Man back alive. So that was interestingly structured, I would say.
Perfect.
So, this is where I normally go into the, like, the, well, how did we get to this point? How did we get to this movie? This was actually a listener recommendation, and this was recommended for us and specifically for Cameron. It said,
oh God.
It said, why don't you guys do Masters of the Universe for Podshots and you should get on Cameron. All right.
Done. He gives things a chance.
Yeah. And I was like, maybe that's what it was. And the listener, after chatting with him back and forth, came to this show through the show that you and I do together, which is Filmographies. And okay. So that's why he must have wanted to hear us do just one movie, which we hadn't done in a little while. So tell me, Mr. Rice, about your history with Masters of the Universe. Were you a He-Man guy? Were you a action figure and TV series guy? Or were you late to the party on that end? Or were you a She-Ra guy, maybe? Or are you a Masters of the Universe first kind of guy?
Oh God, I love She-Ra. No, I think I'm a little late to that party. I showed up at the party and the only person left was the host and he's cleaning up the mess.
Like, no, yeah. I'm here.
Yeah. What do you mean it's over?
What are we doing?
Your Facebook invite said till 3. I think Masters of the Universe was just a little before, me. I think like there's a generation of people who it's like their thing was, because this was all around the same time, was Masters of the Universe, G.I. Joe, and Transformers.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I was coming of age and enjoying cartoons as a young man, those were the old shows.
Mm-hmm.
And they would occasionally show reruns, but my shows were DuckTales, Ninja Turtles, and the real Ghostbusters.
What about X-Men and Spider-Man?
That was by the time I was in elementary school.
Okay.
So it's like, for me, like, Ninja Turtles, Real Ghostbusters, and DuckTales is like stuff I watched in like preschool when you're a little kid and you first start buying action figures.
Mm-hmm.
By the time Batman and X-Men and we go through that animation boom of like Disney Afternoon and all this other stuff, I was in elementary school by that point.
Okay.
So He-Man was right before my time, but this movie I feel like has always been there.
Mm.
And so I think this movie is, not to get into the film, but just my small history with the film. This was a movie I think my parents probably recorded on VHS. It was probably on a free movie weekend on Showtime or the Movie Channel. So this movie was like on a VHS with probably Monster Squad and Ghostbusters, maybe Gremlins, like that era when your parents would record 4 or 5 movies on one VHS.
And some of them would be R-rated and they wouldn't know it.
Yeah, some of them would be R-rated. There'd be boobs in a random one.
Yeah.
Some really violent scene. So Masters of the Universe, the film, has always kind of been swirling in the childhood, along with many other films that would influence me far more. I've since rewatched some of the cartoon series. There's comic books that have been out that are great. Some DC comics that are pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. But as far as like, was Masters of the Universe a big part of my childhood? The answer would be no.
Interesting. What's funny is that, you know, I'm just a bit older than you. And so this hit me with the action figures perfectly. And I had a whole lot of the action figures and had, you know, Castle Grayskull, and I had whatever Skeletor's, like home base was that had trap doors and all this sneaky stuff. And I had, of course, had Battle Cat and all of that, and had, you know, several different He-Man, and it wasn't to an obsessive level where I wasn't like trying to get all of them or anything. It was like a burgeoning obsessive. And once I started getting into the comic books more serious, then I was like, oh, okay, this is I'm hooked to this now. And it was a thing that I just kind of fell out of. And when the movie came out, I was just sort of not getting into it as much, I think.
Yeah, the movie's 87. The cartoon and the action figures are the early 80s.
Yeah, I believe it's like 84.
Yeah.
And so I want to say that, you know, it's not that I was too cool for it, because I definitely went through a stage with that, with different comic book properties and that sort of thing. But it was more along the line of I was distracted by too much other stuff, you know, and you're just a kid that
girls.
Yeah. Well, not even that. I mean, I was born in 79, so I was 8 when this came out. So I probably saw it when I was maybe 9 or 10, because we definitely didn't go to the theater to see it. But I remember, you know, being all about the action figures and all about the different, you know, having babysitters come over, and that's what we would do. But then a few, you know, months or a year later, and it was on to the next thing. You know, I remember getting really big into, in 88, getting really big into, baseball cards, which I have that I should just light on fire because they're not worth a dime.
Good call. That's you're a parent now. It's a really good idea.
Yeah.
Show the child how to deal with old things.
Yeah, we'll do it when she's gone.
Burn it.
Just burn it. That's what I'm going to do to your dolls next. You know, something like that. But, what ended up happening with my sort of collection was there was a deal that I wasn't playing with them anymore. And my parent or my mom specifically was just like, well, we're putting these on the garage sale and selling them. And at the time I didn't care. And I'm sure I threw a fit and at one point was trying to rebel and like, well, you threw away my stuff, you know, and all that kind of typical kid stuff. But so I was much more in tune with the animated series and the action figures than I was with the movie. And this is probably the third time maybe that I've seen it. And definitely the first time in the last 10, 15 years or so.
This one's probably in the somewhere in the double digits for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also probably been about 10 years.
Yeah. And so it was a thing where I was like, I knew of it and I knew kind of what had happened. And I definitely remembered the golden Skeletor or the yellow Skeletor or whatever towards the end of the movie. But there were things that I remembered, but there was a great deal that I forgot. Like I didn't remember that Tom Paris was the main teenage boy, and I knew just from it being sort of folklore that Courtney Cox was the teenage girl, but I was like, oh, hey, it's the guy from Star Trek Voyager. All right. So it was kind of an interesting rewatch, a few days ago here. So what did you think of this watching it this time around?
Well, I got one thing though. What do you think is worse? The fact that your parents, cause everyone has my parents either sold or threw away my action figures. I still have my old action figures, but I was so young that I painted them.
Oh yeah, I drew on mine. Like I had marker drawings on them, and I must have been pissed at one of the He-Mans because I marked all over his face one time.
Yeah, I have some Ghostbusters action figures. Actually, the thing that happened to me was if I look now, it would be like I was a collector. But when you're a little kid, you're just a little kid buying stuff. I think I had almost every major Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles toy from like 90 to 91. And then our garage burned down and it all went up in a fire.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Thousands of dollars today.
It's one of those where, you know, Anna's big into My Little Pony at the moment. And so it's everything pony. And then the last couple of weeks, she's been sort of getting out of the ponies and wanting to watch like, you know, Disney, like live action shows instead of the cartoons. I'm like, oh no, these are so bad though. Just watch the cartoons. Like these actors are so terrible. Like just
the children's sitcom.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely a lot of like Jesse and a lot of those really young target audience shows. And they're pretty rough to sit through.
Perfect. Welcome to Parenthood.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Hit me smack in the face.
Yeah. There's the stuff they don't cover on the NBC show.
That's true.
Okay. Children's terrible taste.
So getting to the movie, what did you think of this on the rewatch? Was it one of those where you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I can see where it's a cult favorite and it was fun, but it was kind of, you know, you can see the budget not exactly being there and Dolph's not great or did you not enjoy it or what did you think?
Okay. So I think for me, there is that degree of wanting to separate childhood nostalgia because even though it's been 10 years, I remember giant chunks of this movie,
mm-hmm.
but I kind of wonder if it's one of those things when, you know, when you're a little kid, every movie is a long movie.
Right.
And then you watch it as an adult and it's only 85 minutes and you're like, whoa, no wonder I watched this 80 times in one weekend. So I remembered large chunks of this movie from all over the place. But for me, I do try to have that kind of step away, take away childhood nostalgia as best you can sometimes when we do this kind of thing. And that's essentially what my other podcast, Geek Flashback, is about, is watching movies when you were a kid and how's it hold up and blah, blah, blah. But I can't deny that I think this movie probably being on a VHS with Total Recall or one of the Police Academy sequels or something like that. For the most part, I totally recognize the issues of this movie. It's not an A movie. It's not a B movie. But I had a lot of fun actually with it.
Good. I think that it was a movie that is very easy for me just to have on, I think. Like, if this was something I had on VHS, I would just put it on and go about my day and just have something on in the background to listen to. And I could be like, oh, okay, yeah, check, I'm gonna watch this scene and, look at that. That action sequence didn't work at all, you know, and just kind of have fun with the good try, but this part was rough and, oh, I kind of like this bit, you know, and that kind of watching it in that end as opposed to sitting down and really trying to digest what Gary Goddard was going for, you know?
Well, I think this is the interesting thing sometimes about watching these movies as adults now is you look at like who made these movies. Cause when you're a little kid, it's a He-Man movie. That's it.
Yeah.
It's a He-Man movie. It's almost like it's hard to talk about this movie. And despite the fact that if you were to buy today the Blu-ray or the DVD, it would say it has a WB logo on the side of it. This was not a Warner Brothers movie. And that's worth noting. This was a Canon film. And anyone listening to this is not aware of the canon of Canon.
Shame on you.
I know. How dare you? Canon was essentially a B to C grade movie kind of. They mostly did action movies. Their big thing was Chuck Norris. They did the Death Wish sequels. They would later do a lot of Van Damme's early work, other Dolph Lundgren movies. So Canon was like the big boobs, bombs, plot kind of movies, like someone's going back to Vietnam. Like they did all the Rambo ripoffs kind of things. Even though they also did a couple Stallone movies. But this was the era when Canon was like for 1 year, 86, 87, trying to break out of that and try to be more like, we could also make Spielbergian blockbuster movies. We can make these big event pictures. But they didn't spend the money that probably should have been spent.
Well, they did definitely take a big swing with the two movies that they made consecutively here.
Well, they do this and Superman 4 are the two main ones. It's also, they also do Alan Quatermain, which is their Indiana Jones attempt. And they do, even though it's a Stallone movie, Over the Top, which is essentially a Karate Kid.
Now that's a great movie though.
I'm not saying any of these are bad.
I love parts of Over the Top.
Oh, I'm not saying they're bad, but this is them trying to expand their market.
Right.
And obviously if you see Superman 4, ooh.
Yeah, that's bad.
They're not good. The budget's not there. And I think this movie also suffers from budgetary constraints. I'd say, I think compared to Superman 4, there's a lot of stuff that works. But there are, like the opening of the movie, first time you see He-Man, it's He-Man and Man of Arms talking about the battle they just had.
Yeah.
And you don't see, there's no battle.
Well, yeah, because that was one of the first notes that I had was, well, besides the fact that the opening score in the first scene reminds me a ton of Star Wars.
I think it's supposed to be, Star Wars makes sense. I always kind of thought it was Superman.
Oh, okay. Sure.
But the score is from Bill Conti. Bill Conti did the Rocky movies.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's a total attempt at like a John Williams Star Wars Superman, I like the score a lot.
Do you? Okay.
I love the Cosmic Keys score.
I think that, oh, the main theme, like the actual tone that's played?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that what it was is it was just too, it wasn't that it was bad. It was just so, it was just too similar to me. And so it was always reminding me, you know, like it was always a reminder of that. It was a very close cousin to a John Williams as opposed to, I could never really separate myself and feel like it was its own thing. I was like, oh, this is just riffing off of a John Williams is what it felt like to me.
I guess for me what ends up, because again, this is where you get into the childhood nostalgia thing. It's like, that was never, I was never aware of that until it was pointed out to me.
Okay.
Like this was always the He-Man score. And then someone was like, oh, it sounds like Superman. And now it's like, oh yeah, it does sound like Superman.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing where that's something that I definitely did not remember whatsoever. And so watching this beginning sort of fresh was like, oh wow, that's similar. Weird. But what I was going to say was that, the battle that you had alluded to, I put, well, Eternia looks like shit. Why can't we see that? Like, you know, it's not like he wants to rule this desolate planet that's been war scarred or something. Like, if you see it in the cartoons, it's a beautiful looking place, right? And so in here, it's like, okay, well, this is, shit's gone down, and that's unfortunate that that's something that had to be skipped over.
Yeah, it's, you don't see much of Eternia. I would say there wasn't much of a budget for extras.
Mm.
I would say either in, like, beyond, like, there's Skeletor's, henchmen, all the guys in the black stormtroopers.
Yeah.
There's those guys, but like, when in the last act of this movie, Skeletor is driving through the town mm-hmm. in his Emperor from Star Wars chair.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one lives in this town.
Yeah. It's apparently like 3 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday and nobody wakes up to the sound of gunfire or explosions.
Yeah. And I could also see, you know, you can also see where the budget is at play. Cause like there's no, I mean, except for, Wildor, there's no like creature. I mean, there's Skeletor's men. Mm-hmm. But there's no like battle cat. There's nothing like that. And so I could see if you were an established He-Man fan going into this movie could be super disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Because I think I read something about how Mattel had this in the works before the animated series had started. And I thought,
that makes sense.
I thought that certain things like, Orko and, Battle Cat had been introduced after the script that they wanted to go with had already been developed. Or like it had been far enough along to where they didn't want to design and develop a Battle Cat or something.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's possible.
To where it wouldn't really fit. But like I said, they also wouldn't have the budget for something like that. And I have a feeling that might look like, the little guys from, Ghostbusters.
Yeah. I think it is worth noting that the writer of this film, David O'Dell, was also a writer. I would love to see what the first draft or original drafts of this script were.
Mm.
Cause David O'Dell was also a writer on The Muppet Show. He won Emmys for The Muppet Show. He wrote The Dark Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
So he is used to dealing with fantastical universes with puppets and creatures and all this kind of stuff. So it wouldn't surprise me if perhaps the first draft of this movie was, maybe it wasn't, but far more creature focused, and all this other stuff, and maybe much more in Eternia.
Yeah.
Because like the first chunk of this movie where it's all Eternia, I will say, I think for me, a big, point for this movie is Frank Langella.
Oh yes. He's having a great time.
I love his Skeletor. I think it's awesome.
Well, like, he's definitely going with the Shakespearean bent.
Oh yeah. I probably got more endeared to that, portrayal when I think this was around the time Frost Nixon came out. And I can't remember if it was AV Club or one of those sites that's like interviewing an actor who's hot at the moment about, roles they used to do. And I think this interviewer was like hoping Langella was going to be like, I think the guy's intent was for Frank Langella to be like, oh my God, Masters of the Universe, and have like a really funny, haha, wasn't this movie bad kind of interview.
Mm-hmm.
And the interviewer, this is a written piece, even says like, can we talk about Skeletor? And this kind of like, oh my God, you did this thing once. And Frank Langella's response was, oh my God, I love that role.
Hmm.
And the interviewer was like, oh, basically was like, wasn't that embarrassing or this, that, and the other? And Frank Langella was like, no, that was super fun.
Yeah, that's good.
And well, this is like 20 years later after he's nominated for an Oscar, when it would be super easy for him to just be like, ugh.
Right. And you can definitely tell that one of the main characters is having fun and one of them does not seem to be.
Yeah. So there are issues with the movie, but beyond budget and stuff, you know, wish were there. The movie as it is, the biggest issue is, once they get to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand from a story reason, why maybe, especially for the budget problems.
Yeah, saving money, right?
saving money. Let's just go to a little town. But the biggest issue is once they get to Earth and they all separate, to go, find the key, the cosmic key, He-Man disappears for like 25 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
And you're kind of stuck with these teenagers, which is not necessarily bad, but you're already 20 minutes into your movie and you've left your main, all your main characters, even the villain. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of stuck with these new characters who now we have to meet and be introduced to and find out what's up with them. So I don't know, like I could see on paper why this seems like it would work. The problem is though, is it takes away from the journey of the heroes.
Hmm. Sure. I can see that. I think part of the thing that was, I guess, was frustrating for me when I was watching He-Man himself and why I guess I didn't quite mind as much when he was gone was that I felt like he was bored and I was kind of bored watching him, and everything that he was doing didn't necessarily seem like it was a difficult obstacle for him to overcome. Like it was like, oh man, there's 40 guys around him. Well, they're all just going to stand and wait and not shoot their guns and all fight him hand to hand. And it's kind of like, you know, the choreography wasn't great. And so I'm watching He-Man and I'm like, okay, well, they're just like, this is just kind of really taking its time, but he's not really struggling too much until they get on the rooftop later. And that's kind of that's a real brutal action sequence. That's my least favorite of them, I guess. But that was sort of the problem I had, to where the choreography was lumbering and I felt like, it was just a not real well developed character because it was just so easy for everything that he was doing, but it wasn't like easy and it was cool watching him. You know, how sometimes you see someone like, I think this gets used too much, but like a Jason Bourne, to where he's a good fighter and it's cool watching him. I felt like He-Man, mm-hmm. it was like, ah, man, like this is going really easy, but this is kind of rough to watch him lumber this big ass sword around and just kind of hop here and there and do some, weird skateboard looking things or rollerblade looking things later.
Yeah, but I could have listened to hours of just his, ugh, every time he was with a sword. So good. No, I hear what you're saying. It's not unlike, I think, a similar problem. And this might be the problem the writers had doing this, was like the Superman thing is you have someone that's so powerful.
Yeah.
How do you make them blah, 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 blah. The problem is, and I could see why the two teenagers probably were taking over the Jimmy Olsen role.
Yeah.
Which is understandable, but then that's where I would almost say, like, give that to Man at Arms and Teela.
Who do, you know, mostly nothing.
Yeah. Other than like fill, you know, screen time and dialogue. But that said, Gwildor eating barbecue sauce. It's fantastic. That was the best.
I remember, I see that and I was like, oh man, I bet I loved the shit out of him when I was little.
I like him now.
You know, I watch it and I'm like, oh man, like that's okay. That's fun. But that's
E-Man.
That's the thing where I wonder where that, cause I guess I don't know the world well enough to know that that's a created character, if that's someone from that.
He was a created character. I think he was supposed to essentially be a stand-in for Orko.
Okay. Can have a little, Pac-Man ghosty looking thing.
Yeah. Well, it also flying effects.
Yeah.
They're probably like, let's just create a character. But here's the things I will say I really appreciate about this movie. I like that it just starts.
Yeah, you know, that's what I had in one of my first notes also, is I love that it's essentially a third act at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and that is something I appreciate about 80s fantasy movies. I know, I remember when, this movie's not good, but I remember when Green Lantern came out, a lot of the thing people hardcore snarked on was the opening, monologue from Jeffrey Rush, being like, here's the world.
Oh, setting up
Green Lantern. Yeah. I have a soft spot for that stuff, and I think it's because of 80s fantasy movies. Mm. And Lord of the Rings does it too with Cate Blanchett.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love that stuff. I love it because it just drops you right in the world and it's like, here we go. I like that things happen in this movie that you don't need explained, that a movie that now debatably it takes away from a possible comedic moment, but I love that Gwildor just shows up with a car that he souped up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm perfectly fine imagining how that all happened. Mm-hmm. So I just love that it's like, it drops you into it. Here's Skeletor. Here's He-Man. Let's just go. Here's the world. The sorcerer. Yeah. It's like you said. Yeah. It's like the opening of this movie is the third act of another movie that we missed.
Yeah.
Where it's like the sorceress was captured. There was a giant battle. And I will say, going into the Earth stuff, Beast Man getting ammonia in the eyes. Oh, I mean, yeah. nothing even like gory or violent happens. Like, it's just water. But if you're in the world, I think about getting ammonia in the eyes and I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, really.
And also Courtney Cox's leg wound.
Oh yeah, gross.
Super brutal.
Wow. Cause Robert Duncan McNeil, I forget what his name is in the movie, but he's, the boy teenager, but he's looking at it and I'm like, oh wow. Like
Kevin.
Yeah. It almost was like a scene when we did William Friedkin in Deal of the Century, and it was all of a sudden it was really gory, really bloody. And you're like, whoa, what?
Well, yeah, there's also like when Beast Man gets injured and he starts bleeding out of his head, mm-hmm. and it's like, pretty good blood. Like, it looks like they didn't do the thing of like, oh well, these are creatures so they'll bleed blue or anything.
Sure.
It's like,
yeah, it's just,
nope, it's blood. I really like James Tolkien as Detective Ludwig.
Oh yeah, now he's another guy that seems like he's having a lot of fun.
Oh, I love the ending where he's like, why would I go home? I got a castle, I got a pretty girl. who's that girl? I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, I'm done dealing with McFly, boy. I'm just gonna stay on this world.
Yeah, he's basically pretty much playing the same character that he plays in Back to the Future, but he's wearing a trench coat, carrying around a shotgun.
He's got his little "oh shit" that he says all the time, just like the "I'm too old for this shit."
Yeah, I think, and that might be the stuff I do appreciate about this movie is because this was made by Cannon, who's so used to making R-rated movies, their version of a kids movie is still like, has grossness and violence, characters curse. Kevin tackles a cop and holds a gun on him.
Yep.
There's an unnecessarily traumatic sequence of a girl's dead mother coming back.
Yeah, really.
And you like,
know, well, cause Evil Lyn had to do something.
Which Meg Foster is Evil Lyn, I also love.
Yeah, she's great. You know, it is unfortunate to hear about like how heavy her costume was. To where she basically couldn't sit down in it and she couldn't hardly move. And then she had also drew upon some Shakespeare and was playing Lady Macbeth, basically, is what she had said, I believe, if I read that right. And, you know, of course, a lot of people are like, oh, did the contacts hurt her eyes? And that's just her eyes. That's just how her eyes look.
Oh, yeah. You go watch They Live or anything else she's in. That's her eyes.
Osterman Weekend, remember?
Yep.
From Sam Peckinpah's last film, she was in that. And I was like, oh yeah, it's the lady with the wolf eyes. All right. I'm ready. Cause she was a badass, like bow hunter hunting people in that movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Towards the end. So I was like, well, yeah, this is going to be good. But you know, I think there's so many different elements that I do honestly enjoy. And I think that for me, really the thing that does set me back is something that I already mentioned, and it's the way things are choreographed. And I just think that it just doesn't look right to me, and it makes it difficult for me to enjoy a lot of the action bits.
Yeah, Gary Goddard, not primarily a film director. In fact, this is his only movie. He did, if you look at his work, it's all like, Jurassic Park, the ride, the interior line experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if you were to come to Universal Studios and ride Jurassic Park, the ride, there's all this stuff with Richard Attenborough, like being like, welcome to Jurassic Park. Here's this. Here's that. So he mostly has directed theme park stuff.
Mm.
And which I think might explain a lot of the shots.
Sure.
If you watch any like videos for theme parks, while you're entering a ride, there is a lot of like, dead on shots directly on people, very tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now that you say that, it is very tight on people's faces,
which works great when Frank Langella is speechifying.
Yeah. And he's still, you know, and that's the thing too, that looks really good. I thought Skeletor's actual face looks pretty good.
Yeah, I think they spent wisely in that Beast Man looks good.
Mm-hmm.
The snake guy looks really good. Who gets like electrocuted.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then there's the guy who's got like a knife for a hand, who's like the only one of Skeletor's monster men who has lines of dialogue. Get her!
Oh, yes. Sure.
And he's going for it too. I think that's the thing. Like, the reason I appreciate this movie is like, even the stuff that doesn't work, everyone feels like they're going for it. Like we're talking about people are trying to bring in their Shakespeare training. The makeup is all there. The movie just starts. There's a lot of elements. It really is just like, I think the, for me, I can even go with like some of the shoddy directing. For me, it really is that like 20 to 25 minutes where it's like, you're no longer with the fantasy elements and you're now just kind of watching a teen drama of, is this girl going to go to the airport and miss her boyfriend's band practice?
Yeah. And, oh, well, she'll go to the gym, I guess. And they're hanging there for a while. And I'm just like, what are we doing?
But once like the creatures come in and they like attack the gym and then attack the music store.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get that guy that's like, they ruined my store.
Yeah, that's funny. I think I put something to the effect of the 80s, like, generic music place or like the typical, like, yeah. It's not like in the middle of nothing. They've got to set it in some place like a store or some place like a movie store or a music store or something.
Is this an E-sharp? Is this E-sharp?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I play the drums, so clearly I'm going to know. Was it the drums or the, no, he played the piano.
Played the keyboard.
Yeah, the keyboard.
And then he gets his great motivational speech from Gwildor, not even a speech, but he's like, I just play keyboard in a high school band. There's hundreds of me. And Gwildor is like, there's only one of you, Kevin. There can only ever be one.
And that's what does it.
It's great. Super simple. I love it.
And he's like, oh, you are so right, little person that I should be freaked out by.
I love when they go back to Eternia and they took half a car with them.
Oh, yeah. That was a fun little set. That was fun. I
think the set's really good. I think Skeletor's castle is awesome. And then leading into his speech when he goes Gold Skeletor.
Oh,
I still quote when I can. If the opportunity arises, I'll still go like, flows through me the power.
That's good.
Oh,
I do like that. I do. I do want to talk about the rooftop, and you know the battle I'm talking about, where before they leave, and so
where He-Man goes surfing USA.
Yeah, he goes surfing USA, and it makes me think like he looked like I put that he looks. Is this better or worse looking than Kane Wise, played by Channing Tatum in Jupiter Ascending? Because it was essentially, it was like the same sort of look, just different decades in terms of technology.
I haven't seen Jupiter Ascending.
Oh, well, don't bother then. But it's basically a big, muscly guy, kind of in a, not a real masculine looking sort of flight, I guess, because it's not-
Which might be why I appreciate it.
Yeah, and so, in Jupiter Ascending, you have Channing Tatum and he's doing like, air rollerblades, basically. And like speed skating around. And it has the same sort of like, swooping to each side, like if you're going down like a toboggan or something, like you're just like swooping from side to side. That's kind of what He-Man feels like Jupiter Ascending has a little bit of that as well, where you're like, wow, this is computer graphics for sure. Like, I'm not identifying with this part so much. But, okay, so we have that, where he's doing Surfing USA, as you said. And we also have where there's a sequence where the key is stolen, and He-Man's in the line of fire. And rather than, like, finding cover, he just squats, like, nothing's in front of him. He just squats down and just hangs. And he's not, like, looking at the camera. He's, like, looking away. And the people are just shooting everywhere around him and not hitting him. And I'm like, oh, my God, could that have used another take or two? Because it was just like, oh, I'm going to duck behind. Nah, I'm just sitting right here. They're not going to shoot me.
I love it.
So that was pretty, that struck me as funny. And that's the sort of thing that I get a kick out of when I'm watching this, where it's like, oh, that's so silly. Like, look how clearly not correct that is. But it just kind of makes me chuckle a bit, you know, and it's like, oh, well, it doesn't.
I guess, like, I find that stuff charming. Yeah, I don't know why. That's what I mean, yeah. Like, for whatever reason, like, shoddy filmmaking today, movies are so expensive. And now, because we no longer, cheap movies are no longer shot on film, they're shot digitally, so you can do as many takes as you want. So, like, shoddy filmmaking today is not nearly as charming as to shoddy filmmaking from, like, the 70s, 80s, and 90s, where it's like, they had no budget, film is super expensive, they're like, good enough, just like, none, let's go.
They won't even see you, let's move on.
We gotta finish shooting this in a month, let's go. We gotta make a release date. So, like, you know, the stuff like Dolph Lundgren on this thing, and he's standing in front of what's clearly a rear projection. I don't know. I find that stuff super charming.
Yeah. So,
and I hear what you're saying about Dolph Lundgren. Maybe there's something weird about him that I do enjoy. It might sound like I enjoy this movie ironically. Like, I have this step back where I'm like, oh, it's so bad and silly. I love it. It's so bad. It's good. For me, that's not the case with this movie. Like, I genuinely have a pretty good time with it. And I do like Dolph Lundgren. I think this is probably this and Showdown in Little Tokyo are debatably his most likable characters, if only because, like, they smile.
Oh, because yeah, it's not just a physical presence like Rocky IV.
It's not just, yeah, and a lot of people just kind of Rocky IV'd him, where, like, even though I like this movie okay, the first Universal Soldier, for the most part, he's just a giant, quiet person, except for the beginning, where he's made a necklace out of human ears.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, we gotta get out of here. And it's mostly Van Damme's movie. But that was before Van Damme became what we know as Van Damme, which the sweet spot of Van Damme is Time Cop and Sudden Death.
I think I'm an early Van Damme kind of guy with a Bloodsport.
I like Bloodsport,
Lionheart?
I like that too, but after, there's this period between Time Cop and Bloodsport where he does some canon movies with, Puyan, the director, who did Captain America.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The 90s Captain America with Salinger, which are not good. He's not very charming. They kind of make him stoic. And Universal Soldier, because he's supposed to be playing like a cyborg type again. Van Damme is not quite charming Van Damme.
Interesting.
So it's not till he comes back around to like Sudden Death and Hard Target.
It was, I think it was The Quest is when I lost the thread of Van Damme.
Well, the movie he directed.
Well.
From 96, yeah, which might be worth going back to rewatch, at least the very beginning, maybe. Where he plays an old man in a bar in old man makeup and beats up a bunch of kids. Too good.
Oh, I watched those early ones a lot, though. I do have a soft spot for those.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. So, there's something about Lundgren that's like, I do like, and that probably is nostalgia, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay with admitting I have nostalgia about, like, there's this critic who, I really appreciate, and I think he kind of nailed it on the head that for whatever reason, film is the one place we're not allowed to bring nostalgia to, but music and comic books, it's acceptable and in fact encouraged.
Yeah, that is interesting. It's like, whenever you view film, it has to be from your current mindset and it has to be compared to what's good now or something.
Yeah, whereas music, it's perfectly fine for you to be like, oh, this takes me back.
Oh, I mean, the 80s is a garbage music time, but I'll listen to some 80s music and be like, oh, hell yeah.
I do not agree. My God. What's your fiance say? Does she like the 80s or no?
She is born in the late 80s, so she's, I don't know, she's more of a hip-hop kind of a girl.
Oh, I'm going to have to send your kid a mixtape. This is terrible.
Please, I mean, anything to get me out of the kids bop or the whatever the hell that are called, the freaking like the I'm so fancy, but it's cleaned up.
You know what? No, I'm gonna let you have that for a couple more years.
Oh God, it's terrible.
You've earned that for your terrible slander against the 80s.
I'm telling you, I listen to a lot of. I run to 80s 80s cardio on my Pandora.
You're right. You just redeemed yourself.
that's literally what I run to. Eye of the Tiger gets me every time.
So sadly, I did not get to I was hoping to listen to the commentary track on the Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah.
It's worth saying the Blu-ray looks pretty good. They did a good cleanup job. But I didn't get a chance to. But that would have been interesting. I'm sure there's probably behind-the-scenes stories. Because Canon, as a company, there's a documentary that's going to come out soon from the guy who did Not Quite Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
A documentary about Canon and Canon Pictures. And I know a lot of the people from back in the day are talked to about their experiences making Canon movies.
Great.
And I don't know how much Masters of the Universe is covered, if it's covered at all, if it's just all the Chuck Norris Death Wish days.
Mm-hmm.
But if you read about Canon, it's crazy.
Well, you would think that they would have a little bit of time spent to when they were trying to reach outside.
Well, they were hoping
Superman 4 and this and the Spider-Man movie and
yeah, so they were hoping to do a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
This was, you know,
oh, yeah, because he says I'll be back. He says the Terminator line, old Frank does at the end.
Yeah, but they were having problems, Canon financially, so that's when they broke off their deals with both Mattel and Marvel. But they had already spent $2 million on sets and costumes and all this other stuff for what was going to be, you know, I guess Masters of the Universe 2 and Spider-Man.
Hmm.
And so they had these sets and these costumes and everything. So Andrew Puyan went and wrote Cyborg, the Van Damme movie.
Oh, okay.
So if you go rent Cyborg, you look at those costumes, you look at those sets, you're like, oh, this is supposed to be Masters of the Universe 2.
Interesting. I did not know.
Not from the script standpoint, but just from the set costume standpoint.
Huh. Well, I'll maybe have to check that out.
It's okay.
Is it? Not great?
Not really.
Not great. Okay, well, yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the, let's talk just briefly, you mentioned it earlier, about the godlike Skeletor.
Oh, yeah.
This is another bit of really over the top, but fairly similar to like a Lord of the Rings looking costuming.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh, like, man, I like that. I don't know if it's just the headpiece or what that is what does it for me, but I'm like, that's a good look. Like, and I'm digging this monologue that he's got going here, and I'm liking everything about it. And then we have the, I think the character's name was Blade, maybe, or something along those lines.
The guy with the whip and swords?
Yeah. He's the guy who did the choreography between the main fights. Between him and He-Man, and then Skeletor, who was in the suit. It wasn't Frank Langella doing the fighting, but he was the one in the suit then fighting He-Man after the Blade character had been disposed of. And so those were the bits where, you know, I can see an old Star Wars fight scene and be like, okay, I'm feeling what I'm supposed to be feeling in these sequences. Here, you know, since He-Man is like, since they don't do the Adam character, since they just do him as only the unstoppable guy, I'm watching it going, well, this is so clearly set up to where he's just going to overcome, and it, you know, there's not exactly any emotional impact for any sort of victory or what have you. And it just, like I said, I think the main problem for me is it's just staged clumsily, I feel like. Like, it's just not staged.
It's staged like a 1980s music video.
Yeah, it. Yeah.
They're in front of giant lights, which this is where you get into. Yeah. This is where you get into your memories as a kid. As a kid, I thought they went to like a different dimension.
Mm.
That's at least my memory of it. Was like He-Man and Skeletor went to a different place that was all dark and a light. And now watching it now, I'm like, oh wait, no, that didn't happen.
No, they're just in the same spot. Lighting is just a little different. They just turned around. That was the deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. That was a thing where I was like, oh man, I wish they would have hired someone specifically for some, you know, some like Conan style fighting. I mean, you got this huge sword. Just watch Conan and just do something like that. It just didn't feel like that. And that was just a bit of a letdown watching this. Cause I was hoping for, I was like, Dolph Lundgren, he's a big dude. He's going to do the physicality correct, whether he can line read or not. I mean, there was also that bit about how originally he was supposed to have his lines dubbed, but then they ran out of money and time, and they're like, well, I guess you're doing it. So
that's fine by me.
Yeah,
You wouldn't get the otherwise.
Yeah, you gotta have those. You gotta have the Rocky getting punched sounds.
Yeah, exactly.
Like delivering the punches sounds.
Well done.
So I guess overall, I was glad that this was a one that was put upon us, because I don't think it was a movie that I would have sought out otherwise. I'd have been like, oh yeah, I know what that's about, and I don't know how much fun I'm gonna have with that. And but I think, you know, for the problems that it has and for the things that I didn't quite enjoy, I was glad that we gave this one a whirl, and I was glad that that we had this recommendation.
Yeah, it's a super easy watch. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing. Like, it doesn't stand up to like hardcore scrutiny, but as like, you know, I'm not gonna say turn off your brain. I think there's enough good in this that can keep you going throughout the movie.
Sure. Yeah, I think that if we were having a conversation that would maybe be more in line with a filmographies where we're trying to figure out like what the through line of the director is and those sorts of things, this one would be like, well, yeah, it was fun, but man, what the hell was it about? And what was, you know, what in the world was it? You know, and what was the deal with the stage and this, that, and the other? But when you just watch it just for entertainment's sake, I think it's fun, and I think it's worth a watch.
Well, we did the filmography. It was this one guy's movie.
Yeah, there it is. Done.
unless we want to go watch the Jurassic Park ride videos.
Yeah. Take all 5 minutes of that and say, well, yeah, that was all right. Next. So, okay. Well, is there anything else about Masters of the Universe? Are you surprised with all of the reboots that this hasn't got the call yet?
Yes and no, only because, I don't know, unlike, Ninja Turtles and things like that, where it's like, there's always been a new cartoon every 3 years or some new iteration. He-Man, there was like a new Masters of the Universe, I think in 2005 as a cartoon.
Yeah, I remember seeing the ads for it.
But it only lasted a season, and that's like, between that cartoon and the first cartoon, there's like 20, 30 years. That's a huge gap, between iterations. So all you have is like a bunch of guys in their 30s. And that's it. Like, this is not like, do kids care about? I really don't know. Do kids care about He-Man?
It's not relevant anymore, you don't think?
So it's not super surprising. At the same time, you know, I mean, I was thinking about this while watching it. Yeah, Dolph Lundgren's not great. I don't know who else could have done this. And I think about that today. Whereas you see with like the Conan movie, God love Jason Momoa, like he was kind of the one guy. And outside of that, and there might be some undiscovered huge muscle man that could really pull off both Prince Adam, and Dolph Lung, and, He-Man. But I don't know who that is.
Mm.
Like if someone would ask me right now who could play He-Man today, I'd be like, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of guys. Physically, it'd have to be someone that's like a wrestler or something, you know, just with the physicality. But then playing Adam and delivering the lines would definitely be an issue. Like someone that I think would look sort of like him, even though he's getting older, would be like Triple H in the long hair days.
Yeah, but that's also to the mindset of like what we know Masters of the Universe to be, which is like He-Man was this huge dude, whereas in the new version, they made him much more of probably what a real sword fighter would be, which is like Prince Adam was like pretty normal looking. And then when he turned into He-Man, he got built, but he looked more svelte built, which that is easier to cast.
Oh, sure.
But at the same time, I could also see people being like, this is bullshit. This isn't He-Man.
Well, Cameron, I've got it. Tom Hardy. Just have Tom Hardy do it.
Oh, man.
Tom Hardy can do anything.
Who do you make? Who's Skeletor?
Someone that could deliver Shakespearean lines. You know what would be great? Have it be someone in a suit and have Frank Langella do the voice.
You know what? When I think about it, I'd actually much rather see Tom Hardy as Skeletor.
Yeah, that'd be good too. Yeah.
He'd deliver those speeches like,
He does blood. Like the big, yeah, I mean, he could do something similar to what he did when he was Bane.
I don't know what voice he would choose for Skeletor.
The man doesn't have a regular speaking voice. It'd be
awesome.
There you go. I mean, I think that would be interesting. I think you've got plenty of people, to choose from if you're going with the more svelte build. And I don't know, maybe this isn't relevant anymore, but you would think with all of the different 80s properties and maybe the nostalgia that they're hoping to get, I don't see why they don't give this a shot, because they have plenty of characters. They have plenty of stories they could do. They have a good, you know, main villain and main hero, and you have your sort of supporting characters that you can draw from. And I mean, they just kind of have an untapped world of characters that I'm just kind of surprised that they haven't gone for yet. And it could be, who knows, it could be in, you know, rights issues, or they, you know, Mattel doesn't want to do what the studio would want to do, or what have you.
Yeah, that's true too. I will say, as a closing note, I've often maintained when I talk about the first Thor movie, that Thor is essentially Masters of the Universe, the movie about boring. And I've said that for years, having not rewatched Masters of the Universe, the movie. I'm glad I can still say that.
Kenneth Branagh directs Masters of the Universe. You already seen it.
I've watched it. Yeah. Yeah. lots of canted angles.
Yeah. Just take the Asgard stuff out and put it in Eternia. Just call it something different. And, you know, change the subplot a little bit.
He-Man falls in love with Courtney Cox.
Yeah. Yeah. Plastic surgery Courtney Cox, and it'll be a thing. Actually, now it would be someone that's another Victoria's Secret model that looks pretty, and, you know, you're like, all right, this is where we're going.
Megan Fox.
Yep. Okay, so I think that'll pretty much wrap us up. If you have any comments, suggestions, or other movies that you'd like to hear us talk about for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm @EricWilliams79. We also have a Facebook page where you could like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. And if you wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to Amazon.com and you could search for our wish list. It's full of movies that we want, equipment that we need, and a whole host of other goodies. In case you're in the giving mood, just search for the wish list called Plain Label Podcast. So I do want to thank Mr. Cameron Rice for coming on and discussing a film with me. If they wanted to hear more from you, where could they do so?
Definitely go check out Filmographies, which me and Eric do. We just wrapped up William Friedkin, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Watched a couple episodes there. Yeah.
Loved it. Hated it.
Yeah. We got to... That, so by the time this comes out, that should be out. And we have our next director, which is Bob Fosse.
Yeah, and I'm watching that when we retire for the evening.
Yeah, that should be good. Yeah, I gotta get that, first film. I already have I have like all of his movies but the first one.
Yeah.
So I gotta grab that. And other than that, just go to Cameron Watches Movies. I have a bunch of shows, but they're all kind of being aggregated over on Cameron Watches Movies, like Geek Flashback and stuff like that. So the most recent thing, by the time this comes out, people should be able to hear me and my friends discussing both Terminator Genisys and Inside Out.
Ooh, interesting. Well, that, and funny you should mention that. I believe, depending on the order of how I decide to release these, I believe our next episode will be on Inside Out. Mm-hmm. So there you go. And we have the guests lined up for that, and we're recording on that shortly. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.